Welcome to the Gold Collar Investor Podcast with your host, Pancham Gupta. This podcast is dedicated to helping the high-paid professionals to break out of the Wall Street investments and create multiple income streams. Here is your host, Pancham Gupta.
Hey, this is Dave Zook, and I listen to Pancham at the Gold Collar Investor Podcast, and so should you.
Welcome to the Gold Collar Investor Podcast. This is your host, Pancham. Really appreciate you for tuning in today. Let's get into today's show. Do you know what the term butterfly effect means? There is a complicated definition of this, but here is a simplified version of it. Butterfly effect means that a small change can make much bigger changes happen. One small incident can have a big impact on the future. The term butterfly effect comes from an analogy where a butterfly flaps its wings in Chicago and a tornado occurs in Tokyo. There is a famous movie named Butterfly Effect that is based on this concept. Anyway, why am I talking about the butterfly effect? The reason is that there are small events that happen in your life that can have a major impact on your future. Sometimes you do not realize the impact at that moment in time, but it's only years later when you look back, you can actually connect the dots. Do you have any such events that have altered the course of your life? Well, I'm super excited to have Dr. Tom Burns, who will share with us his butterfly effect story. Tom is an entrepreneur and an orthopedic surgeon in Austin, Texas. He is currently a physician for United States ski team and travels world with them. He has over 20 years of real estate experience involving acquisition, development, management of traditional multifamily student housing, office projects, and manufactured housing. In addition to co-founding and managing a freestanding full-service hospital, he has owned and developed property locally and internationally and has participated in acquisition and development of $250 million worth of real estate. Tom has been financially independent for a decade. His mission is to help physicians create financial independence so, like him, they can enjoy medicine with passion. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Pancham. Glad to be here.
Are you ready to fire up my listeners, break out of Wall Street investments?
I am ready. That's part of my mission. So let's get it rocking.
Great, great. Now, I'm really looking forward to diving into your study today. It's going to be great. Tom, you have a very interesting background of being a doctor and also a real estate developer. Tell us about your background and how you actually got into real estate.
Boy, it started kind of serendipitously. I was an athlete when I was young, but not good enough to get paid for it. So I ended up becoming a physician in the orthopedic world. I'm a sports doctor, so I wanted to hang out with the athletes that I was used to being with. That's what I did. No financial training in school, typical kind of biology major and off to medical school. So I went through that path, became an orthopedic surgery resident or a person in training. And right near the end of my training, I was hanging out with the doctors that I was supposed to emulate in the future, right? These were the guys I was going to be like in the future. And they were making what I thought was stupendous amounts of money. And they were complaining. They were whining and moaning about lack of time and lack of control and things like that. And these, you know, these guys were making a bunch of money. They were unhappy. They were twice divorced, things like that. I looked at them and said, if this is my version of success, that's not me. So I loved what I did. So I thought, you know what? Maybe I need to find something that's not necessarily correlated with medicine. So I looked around, bounced around, you know, looked at administration in medicine. That was a dead end because I'm fairly unemployable. And I fell upon real estate. So I went to free seminars. You know, there were marketing seminars for financial firms, but I learned a little bit about money, just enough to whet my appetite. And I started learning. Real estate became the right thing for me because it fit the schedule of a busy surgeon. I could do it part-time or full-time. I could do it on the weekends. I could use partners, and it moved slow. And I needed that because I was learning the whole way. So I started learning about it in my training, began learning more and more as I was, you know, starting my practice as a doctor. Again, I'd tell everybody with no financial education or no financial training, you know, I just dove in, you know, kind of to use a sports analogy. I just got in the game. So I bought my first little property. I've had some good things. I've made plenty of mistakes, kind of two steps forward, one step back. I became a relative sort of local expert in one property type. That worked out well for me. That kind of got discovered. I moved on to some other stuff. You can see through the bio that I've kind of bounced around to a number of property types.
Right.
And I've done stuff outside of real estate as well. But what happened is people start knowing that you're in the market. I'm just buying for myself, making a little bit of money a month. People start finding out you're in the market. They ask you to buy or sell things. You buy more and more. Some people ask you to partner with them. That can be good or bad.
Yeah.
And it just organically grew. As you grow, the properties get a little bit larger. It's the same amount of work or the same mindset. You know, you just add zeros. And so the properties got larger. I got to a point where I was pretty good with that. And I was learning. I was going to seminars. I was doing stuff. I just didn't feel I knew enough. So I had a friend that I knew that was in the development business. I said, I like what you do. Will you teach me? He said, yes. So as a full-time orthopedic surgeon, I worked for 2 years for him for free, doing development, doing build-to-suits for banks, land development, finding land for hospitals, things like that. Out of that came a rather large medical office facility that we still own. I learned from him. Years later, I was at a conference in Arizona speaking on stage in 2001, and the moderator's a well-known person we might talk about today, and he had me up on stage, and he basically what he was saying, you know, look, Tom can do it. Even doctors can do it, you know, because the point being doctors, and I'm one of them, but doctors, sometimes, you know, we feel like we know everything. If you're a little more humble and you can kind of just take in what people teach you, sometimes your progress will be a bit faster. Well, he introduced me, and at the break, somebody came up and said, you know, here's who we are. We're from the Bay Area in San Francisco. We're moving to Austin and going into real estate. Will you be our contact? Small little butterfly effect. That was 2001, and it's 2020, and he's been my friend for 19 years, and he's been my partner for over the past 10 years. So it just kind of gradually moved up. In the midst of that trajectory was a lot of mistakes, a lot of lessons. You know, here I am now. Wherever I am now, that's where I am now.
No, that's great. No, absolutely great background there. And I totally resonate with your story that you, out of school, you looked up to a few people and, you know, didn't want to end up the way they ended up. So you kind of started looking and educating yourself, even though you're not taught financial education in school. So that's great. So I met you at one of Cruise conferences last year, and then I've met you multiple times at different conferences. And I want to kind of get into you being the first proud owner of the Rich Dad, Poor Dad Purple Book.
Sure.
Right. Tell our listeners about that story. It's such an interesting story and in how it came full circle later on in your life.
Yeah, boy, that starting with the butterfly effect was something I've never heard the two matched up, and it really does make sense. So years ago, this was about 1997, living in Austin. I was, you know, prior to that, I'd been out of my training as a doctor for 6 years. So I'd been reading, learning, I'd bought some things. So I was sort of on my way, already knowing that as a doctor, the busier I get, more successful I got, the more work I'd have to do. And that wasn't working well. So I was already reading a lot, and my family was out of town. When my family leaves town, I go do errands. That's nothing else to do. So I did all my errands. One of those was to get my car washed. So I went to the local car wash. It's one of those fancy ones where you pay the guy and they take your car for a while. They run it through the machine and then the guys buff it and spend some time out there. So there's a waiting area with green cards and food and stuff. So I go up to pay my bill, and back towards the back left corner, this was a car wash, right? So you know, nobody sells books in car washes. There was a little stack of books. They were purple and gold and had the big word kind of rich on it, you know, and I was already buying books on, you know, how to invest in real estate, how to make money, you know, that sort of thing. So I said, let me see that book. And it said, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, what the rich teach their kids about money and the poor and middle class do not. So I said, sounds pretty good. Put it on my bill. $15.95. You know, if you can't spend $15.95 to learn something, you're not going to make it. So I had a stack of books like this already that I hadn't read yet. So I threw it on my desk at home. I did a bunch of more errands. It was about 11:30 at night. I was going to bed. I stopped by the office and I just sort of, you know, let's see what this book's going to, I hadn't even opened it. Let's see what this book's going to be about. I read a few sentences, a few paragraphs. I kind of leaned against the desk and read a few more and was kind of getting into it. So I had a chair in my office. I sat down and I read some more, and about 3:30 in the morning, the book was finished.
Wow.
3:30 in the morning. In fact, I had a back in the day, you know, I had a CD running with some music and it ran the same album over and over again. So it's still seared into my head. And, you know, and I thought it was the best book I'd ever read. And that's not patronizing it. I still do. It was 3:30 in the morning. There's nobody I'm going to tell. To be honest with you, at the time, you know, I was doing multiple things and, you know, I thought the idea of multi-level marketing made sense. So I was in the Amway organization.
Oh, wow.
So I wait till about 6:30 in the morning. I call a guy and I call a friend and I said, look, I just read the best book I've ever read. You need to read it. And he says, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, great. Give it to me one day. I made sure to get it to him within the next week. He calls me back and he goes, you were right. And on the inside cover of the book, the phone number for the publisher. Nobody's ever heard of this guy. And so call the number on the phone book. And, you know, this was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. Well, the person on the other end of the line that answers the phone is Robert Kiyosaki. Turns out he had self-published 1,000 books, primarily to act as a brochure to sell his board game, Cashflow.
Right.
That was going to be the main product, was the Cashflow board game. So he wrote a book, good strategy. My friend, and I'll tell you, the interim story is that 3:30 in the morning, I finished the book. The next day, I went and bought the rest of the books in the bookstore, in the car wash. He calls back and he calls this guy and he goes, hey, my name's Bill. And, you know, this guy gave me your book and I really like your book. And he said, how many of them do you have left? You know, how many? He said, well, I printed 1,000. He goes, I sent 24 up to Austin. And he said, how many you got left? He goes, 1,000 minus 24. Nobody's bought a book, you know? And he goes, well, I'll take them all.
Wow.
So he buys the rest of the books. And Robert says, you know, who are you? Why do you want these books? He goes, I'm with Amway. You know, I think this would be good for these folks. And so that started, you know, Amway's a large organization worldwide. So a lot of people read the books. That got him to where he was talking to 20, 30,000 people at these large Amway organizations.
Right.
And then he, as Robert tells it, you know, a lot of books got sold and all of a sudden Oprah called. And he said, you know, the day after Oprah called, he became famous. It turns out that the book I bought was the first book ever purchased. And in the interim, what we did, we went, so we called him and he said, great, we'll take all those books. And so we went out, about 10 of us went to Scottsdale to meet Robert.
Oh, wow.
So we go there, we meet Robert and his wife. He comes in flip-flops and long hair, you know, he's young and good looking back then. He's just more good looking now, I guess. he taught us how to play cash flow. And, you know, my wife won the game. Primarily because Robert stood over her shoulder and said, do this, you dummy. And she did it and she won the game. So he gave us his game. So we still have in the cupboard the game Robert gave, you know, one of the first cash flow games. And before the night ended, we go to his house. He reaches in the trunk of his car and he starts pulling out a bunch of books to give me. And I said, dude, I don't want to take all your books. He goes, nobody's going to buy them anyway. And so, you know, fateful words. So I took the books. I've handed them out to friends. I've handed hundreds of them out for years. So things went on. You know, Robert became Robert, the best-selling, you know, personal finance book of all time, 41 million copies and counting later. And as you know, a couple of years ago, we were on the cruise and I was talking to Robert, my wife and I, and I just, you know, I mentioned something. I said, I still got your book. He goes, well, he goes, man, he goes, I don't know where any of those first 1,000 books were. And I said, you know, I got the first one. He goes, wow, that's cool. And I said, take it. It's yours. You know, he goes, you'd give that to me. I said, it's your book. You did, you know, you deserve it. And so I gave Robert back the first copy ever purchased and they framed it and put it in the Rich Dad office. And then he gave me a first edition copy of a book that he and Tom Wheelwright wrote. So
that's an amazing story.
It was kind of nice.
No, so I actually did a whole show on just that book and Cashflow Quadrant, that because that book has literally changed so many lives, including mine. That's my little butterfly effect story over there. So this is great. And I want to talk about like how hard was it for you to do this on the side while you were practicing full time? Like, were you working late nights and weekends? Like, what was it like initially, like before you kind of got your schedule kind of set?
Sure. Always looks easy from the end looking back. I tell you, you know, anything's easy if you got the passion for it, you know?
Right.
I mean, the other option was I was going to work until I died or going to work, you know, work long hours. So it was easy. It was, you know, there was a result at the end. So easy is all relative, right?
Yes. I was about to say that.
And so I was a full-time schedule. I mean, Monday through Friday, taking emergency call. That's where they can call you at any hours of the night. You work on the weekends. So I was working hard, but you know, there's only so many hours to work. There's time in the morning, there's time in the afternoon, and there's weekends. So that's when I did it. You know, my candle was burning at both ends. Mm-hmm. What I did do efficiency-wise is I started my day earlier than a lot of my colleagues. I started at 6:30, where some of them wouldn't start till 7:30, 8, 8:30. So I got more done early because one of my priorities was family. I wanted to be home when the kids got off the bus as they got older. So I made sure I did that. So it was just, yeah, I did it when I could. And again, there's a lot of ways. There's, as Robert says, there's infinite ways to make money. Real estate fit me perfect. And I love real estate. So things moved slow. I didn't have to be first. I didn't have to make that trade at the right time and be watching the computer screen. It really didn't exist very much back then anyway. But So slowly things built. I'd buy one, I'd buy another. And they always say the first one's the hardest. The second one was easier. Some of the others I bought just with a phone call. I bought one once. You know, we have newspapers. Some of your listeners may not remember, but there's newspapers, right? And back in the day, there was a classified section and there was a thing that said, you know, real estate and rentals. And, you know, I looked directly at the student housing market at the University of Texas. I looked at one. It was Sunday night when it came out. I looked at my wife and I said, I'm buying this tomorrow. She goes, how can you do that? It's just an ad. I said, I know the market. It's either got bad, bad problems or somebody doesn't know what they're selling. So true story. I'm in my office on 38th Street in Guadalupe. I'll give you the address at the time. So I had an office full of patients. I saw a few of them, had an appointment with a broker I'd called that morning. I got them all settled. I walked out the back door of my office, drove 8 blocks down to 30th in Guadalupe, quick ran through the place, wrote an offer, said, I'll take it. I went back to my office. Patients didn't even know.
Oh, wow.
Because it didn't take that long. And so in that property, I was right. It was an Austin property. It was a father who lived in Houston. He had bought the thing 4 years ago for his daughter to live in and had no idea that the market had done that in Austin in 4 years. So he underpriced it to begin with. I bought it for less than he offered it for, got it reappraised. And that's one of those Robert Allen no money down stories. I went to closing and they wrote me a $1,000 check. So I literally got it for no money down. I don't recommend that, but it happened to work out and it's cash flowed ever since. So
do you still have it?
I still have it. Absolutely.
Wow. That's
so
crazy.
It's just one little anecdotal story, but that's the kind of things we do. So you just do it when you can. But over time, you know, maybe you make $50 or $100 a month extra, whatever your cash flow is, those things grow and they start stacking on top of each other. You know, you get 2, 3, 4, 5 properties and, you know, you give it a year or two and inflation makes your
compound,
you know,
they compound.
Makes your net cash return better. And so after a while, the first thing I did was I used to have office on Friday afternoon and I was busy. You know, I'd see a bunch of people and then, you know, invariably some emergency would come in. I'd be in the operating room at 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. So the first thing I did was cut out Friday afternoon office. It was great. It was liberating. I all of a sudden had a 2.5 day weekend and that started it. That whetted my appetite and I just started cutting out stuff after that. So gradual process.
Right. No, that's great. Great story there. And now, you know, you're still practicing. Is that right?
I am.
Yeah. So that, there you go. I mean, that's the passion that you have and, you know, it's serving people, helping them out, whether financially or, you know, medically. So what's your schedule now?
You know, I only do mornings and I only see the stuff I want to see. So it's 2 to 5 mornings a week, depending on travel schedule. So since travel's been cut down, I've been going into the office, but I've got a person that can be there if I'm not there. I could call him tonight and say, you know what, I'm not coming in tomorrow. I will, but it's a light schedule. As I told somebody, I'd like to match my W-2 from 2019 with most people in the audience because I made less than my front desk person last year, which is crazy. I know people think I'm nuts. I'll probably make some this year. So I'm not in it for the money. I really do enjoy it. I realized quite a few years ago that at least for me, you know, my favorite time, my best service is to be able to do what I've gotten pretty good at, what I really like to do. I love meeting the people. So it's fun for me. It's relaxing. So that's the schedule. It's pretty light.
Cool. So I want to get into, like, you know, we are in the middle of pandemic and right. In the wake of this COVID-19 situation, how has your strategy, whatever you were doing now, maybe we can get into that. Like, what were you doing before just the pandemic hit? And how has that changed your real estate business? And what changes have you made because of it?
our company's been, some iteration of it's been around since about 2010. So this new iteration is about 3 years old. And we started this version of the company 3 years ago. We knew we were starting it into the headwinds of a recession. Mm-hmm. So we were just wrong. It came later, but you know, it didn't take a brain surgeon to know something was going to happen. We just didn't know if it'd be a virus or a war or something like that. So sort of expected this. So some things we haven't changed. We have made kind of preparations for recession type investment offerings, things such as that. So we're working on those and refining those. But as far as actual activities, there were projects in the pipeline. Most of ours are development, multifamily class A development. We will acquire, but we haven't acquired anything for 3 years because nothing made sense to us in the last 3 years. So we've been developing. The projects that we had in the pipeline were underwritten on assumptions that, you know, we don't want to use right now.
Yeah.
So we have put the pause button on most of those. They're going to happen. We're still underserved. We still don't have enough living units and placed in the right areas, apartments. We still think that it's a good industry up through 2030. You just have to be strategic where you put them. So it's kind of the good news. We can at least pick where we put those. We put all of those projects actually on pause. We have nothing that we're executing on right now.
Mm-hmm.
We may have a product that we execute on that's sort of a risk mitigated product. My cap returns, but it's a stable return. So that's the kind of thing we're looking at right now.
Is that a multifamily deal or?
It is a financial product that fits within the multifamily development world.
Got it.
So a very stable product that has minimal risk. And we can talk about that at another time, but that's kind of how we're thinking.
Got it.
It's just a way to place some money. It's nice return, still closing in on double digit stuff, but limited.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we have a fairly large investor list. We talked to them. That's one thing. We've talked to them just a little bit more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly telling them that, you know, my partner and I both, we've got a lot of years of experience. We've both been through at least two recessions. So telling them we've been there, we've kind of done that. History doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, reportedly, according to Mark Twain. So there's some things that hopefully we learned in the last two. I'm certain there's going to be something I find out that I missed on this one. Aren't we all?
Yeah.
So I'm just waiting to find out what that error or mistake or oversight is going to be. But we're gathering dry powder, gathering capital for when the time does come that there's maybe some discounted or distressed prices. We don't think that's going to happen until maybe Q4 at the earliest,
right?
Q1 21. So that's at least our projection. So that's what we're doing now.
Got it. Cool. Thank you for sharing that. Anything else that you want to talk about before we jump into the next section of our show, which I call Taking the Leap Round?
No, I'm ready to go. Whatever you want to talk about.
All right, great. So we'll be back after this message. If you want to know the top 6 reasons on why you should consider diversifying outside of the Wall Street, then you are in the right place. I have written a free report for you. It goes into not just the top 6 reasons why investing in stocks, 401ks may not be the sound strategy, but also what are the alternatives. Get your free report today on thegoldcollarinvestor.com/download. I repeat, thegoldcollarinvestor.com/download. Let's move on to the next section of the show, which I call Taking the Leap Round. And I ask these 4 questions to every guest on my show. So my first question for you, Tom, is when was the first time you invested outside of Wall Street?
I thought about this, but I'm not sure. It's one of two. It's either kind of a doctor investment, you know, investing in some, you know, one of those things that doctors use all the time, like an x-ray business or something like that. The guy had been successful before and he did another one. So I sort of blindly invested, lost it all.
Everybody. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, of course. Oh, I got lots of those. Or it was my first property was a condo on the campus of the University of Texas here in Austin.
Okay.
That's that student property. And that was the first one. You know, kind of went about, got a loan on it, bought the property, still have it.
Wow.
So it was one of those two.
Got it. Cool.
One was a winner, one was a loser.
That's good. You do all of them and you learn.
Yeah.
So my next question is, what fears did you have to overcome when you first invested in either the x-ray business or this condo? Did you have any fears at the time?
Yeah, still have fear. Yeah, it's the same one for both of them. You know, am I going to lose my money? Because everything was theoretical up to that point.
Right.
That's why getting in the game really, that's where it really teaches you. You know, I learned a lot losing, you know, that was a big number that I lost on that X-ray. That imaging center. And that's where I learned, you know, hey, you check back, track record might be okay, but you need to check the business plan on the current business. And maybe I also learned that maybe I wasn't the kind of guy that was good at investing in businesses at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The other one did well, you know, because real estate, maybe I understood better or I've learned it more. So I was fearful I was going to lose my money. And, you know, sometimes fearful if I'm investing in a business where somebody else has control, I always want to know, you know, are they honest? Are they going to cheat me? Are they going to run off with my money? Which comes back to, am I going to lose my money?
Right.
Yep.
So how did you overcome that?
I held my nose and jumped in the water. Just dove in.
Yeah.
You know,
just do it.
I don't know that I was thinking about it. I just said, you know, you got to do something. So I just did it.
I totally.
And I was, and you know, investing in that business, honest answer, what do? We look at the pro forma, and pro forma, Robert Kiyosaki says every pro forma is a lie. And he's right, because we're all telling the future. The pro forma had these big numbers. And so my brain was only looking at these big numbers, right? So I'm going to make all this money. And so I just did it. So lesson learned.
Got it. Cool. Thank you for sharing that. Can you share with us one investment that did not go as expected? Would you bring that one up, the extra machine, or?
I might as well give you another one. I've got a whole bucket full. So that was one, you know, I can give you one or two. You know, one was in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd been buying condominiums. I got real good at that. And I'd bought a small mobile home park. Yeah, it was anything. If it created passive income, if it put money in the asset box, I bought it. You know, I didn't care what it was at the time. If it made money and I didn't have to see a patient do a surgery or dig a ditch, then I was going to buy that. So I've been buying all these. Well, I came upon an apartment complex. So it was small. So I think it was 22 units.
Mm-hmm.
I bought this apartment complex and needed management. So I got a manager, and I thought I was getting this manager. But what he did was he gave it to his 22-year-old son, I guess, to train him up, you know. You know, the 22-year-old son was just collecting commissions, not doing anything. And I barely got out of that project. I'm sure I lost a little money. I mean, I was able to sell it, but it was a disaster. Immediately lost. They had a contract with some other place that filled up probably 6 or 8 of the units in that compartment on a regular basis. Contract went away as soon as I bought the place. Big surprise. So yeah, I got crushed. Yeah. I've lent money to people, you know, salt of the earth, good God-fearing guy, goes to church all the time and turns out to be a con man. So I've had several of those.
So sorry to hear that. I mean,
they're out there, folks.
Yeah, no. So you do these and you learn. That's it. Like, you know, these are seminars, real life seminars.
Right.
That's what I call it. No, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So my final question for you, Tom, is what is one piece of advice would you give to people who are thinking of investing in Main Street, that is outside of Wall Street, and have never done it before?
The country and the world lives on Main Street. I would tell them that often when you're investing in a private offering or an offering that centers around something on Main Street, you usually have somebody that's got some degree of expertise and often has skin in the game or money alongside you. So in Wall Street, the broker that sells you the mutual fund or the REIT or whatever, or whoever sells you the fund, he's not putting his money alongside yours. You Right. are a commodity to him. He wins whether you win or lose. If you invest in Main Street, you're often investing with somebody who, number one, has probably more expertise than often the broker who might have sold you that mutual fund and has something to lose. So they are out there. They want that project to survive. Doesn't mean it will, but at least if you lose, you know you're going to lose due to market forces, or maybe he was not good at what he did, but at least it was honest. You know, so most of the time that's the case, not always. So I believe Main Street allows you to have more control over your investments. Control is a big thing for me, as far as my finances, my time, and my life goes. I would prefer to control my time. And with Main Street, you can set things up where you control it. You can't call up Bill Gates and ask him to boost Microsoft. You know, you can't do anything about Amazon, but you can raise or lower the rent on your condo, or you can talk to your manager directly and say, how are we going to get more tenants in this apartment complex? So, you know, it provides. My biggest buzzword, and you know, in my book, it's all about passive income. You know, once you get some passive income coming in, it sets you free. You can develop passive income in the markets. I don't know how to do it. I know somebody that teaches it, but most of the time, that's just a kind of a savings capital gain mechanism. You're passive income for the broker if you're investing in Wall Street. That's what it is.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for that advice, Tom. You just alluded to your book. Can you tell us about that? Tell listeners about the book and, you know, what you've coming up.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm just starting to talk about it. It's probably still, it may still be 2 or 3 months away. But my friend Robert Kiyosaki sort of suggested, he said I had a bit of a story. So he suggested to write a book. So it took me 2 years. I wrote it. I wrote every word. I didn't use a ghostwriter. That's leverage I may use in the future, but I wanted to know the process. And it turned out to be a growth 2 years. It really did help. So it's called Why Doctors Don't Get Rich, you know, how you can create freedom through passive income. It's all about passive income. Mm-hmm. So, and like for your listeners, a lot of your listeners have good incomes, have extra discretionary income. Some don't know what to do with it. It won't necessarily tell you what to do with it, but it's going to tell you how to think about it. You know, it's designed to help people kind of take them from A to Z and teaching people that a high paycheck is not necessarily wealth. Wealth is time, freedom, control. And so it's designed to teach you how to do that. And I wrote it to doctors because I'm a physician, but as I tell everybody, just insert lawyer, engineer, right, project manager to where it says doctor, because the tenants are all the same. So that's what it's for. And I just found that there are a lot of people that have high incomes, at least in my profession, in the doctor world. The unhappiness rate, or what they call the burnout rate, hovers around 50%.
Oh, wow.
That means that every other doctor you see at one time or another, maybe not now, but at one time or another wanted to quit medicine. And if you ask a physician, you know, hey, how do you like your job? A lot of them will say, I hate medicine. I hate my job. You say, what do you hate about it? You know, so well, I hate the, you know, the tediousness and the records and this and that. You know, what about patients? Oh, I love seeing my patients. So that's part of why I wrote the book. You know, a lot of them are out there. They're asking questions. They want to know what to do. And if you can just take a little pressure off with passive income, you don't have to replace your whole income. Right. You just take a little pressure off. You know, when I got that Friday afternoon off, it was just a little pressure that was taken off. But I breathed easier. I was smiling more. It was more fun. I could see light at the end of the tunnel. So a little bit of passive income maybe might make those doctors smile a little more. Some will quit, which is great. If they want to quit and they don't like it, that's awesome. It'll help you do that. But if you want to still heal people with the passion that drew them into medicine, a little passive income will help. And it does the same thing for lawyers and engineers, you know. It'll help, right, you get out, or it'll help you enjoy it more. So
absolutely.
That's why the book.
Oh, that's great. So how can the listeners reach you if they want to connect with you?
So the website is richdoctor.com. For you guys, actually, I've set up a special page. If they'll go to richdoctor.com/goldcollargift.
Oh, wow.
There's a team building resource there that I think has been useful. It's kind of what helped work for me. And it's good for folks that are doing things and maybe haven't put a team together. And team is a big part of your success.
Absolutely.
If by any chance they're interested in the book, go to richdoctor.com. You can pre-order and it ought to be out in the next 2 or 3 months. And I tell people if they order through the website, I'll send the digital version for free when I send the print copy.
Wow, yeah, that's great. Thank you for that offer and that special link for the listeners. We'll put that in the show notes. Thank you for your time, Dr. Tom. And it was a pleasure, absolute pleasure having you on.
You betcha. And I meant to ask, if you want to just cut out the middleman, you can just send me an email to tom@richdoctor.com and I'll have you on the list. I'll just send you the digital copy.
Great. Thank you, Tom, for your time.
All right. Thanks, Ponch.
Such a powerful story. Do you have a butterfly effect event happen in your life? If so, do share it with me. You can email me at p@thegoldcollarinvestor.com. That's P as in Paul. That's P as in Paul at thegoldcollarinvestor.com. I appreciate you. This is Pancham signing off. Until next time, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Gold Collar Investor Podcast. If you love what you've heard and you want more of Pancham Gupta, visit us at www.thegoldcollarinvestor.com and follow us on Facebook at The Gold Collar Investor. The information on this podcast are opinions. As always, please consult your own financial team before investing.